information that we need to present to your committee, but she's prepared to respond to any questions that the committee may have with regard to other provisions of the bill.
Thank you, Senator. And we do have the fiscal note in our packets, and this is an impact to the state government special revenue fund, and it's a negative impact. So are there any questions? This was an item that was in the governor's budget. It was not included in our omnibus bill because the policy committee had not taken this bill up. And we don't want to be passing policy that hasn't been dealt with by the policy committee. But if this bill should pass on its own, we can track this in the conference committee, during the conference committee process. Any questions? There are no questions, then Senator Lori, would you like to make a motion for Senator Torres Reyes, since she's not on the committee?
Yes, and I'll move that Senate File 1823 be recommended to pass. Is it going anywhere else?
It would be a recommendation to the full Finance Committee.
And move to the Finance Committee.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Okay, next, we have Senate File 2067, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate you holding an extra meeting. I had a couple bills still in the system when we ran out of time in our last, according to our last schedule. So I'm here today with Senate File 2067, and these are two bills from the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy having to do with licensed professional clinical counselors. And you heard me just present one on the floor, and there are two more that I'll be presenting. Let's see.
60. And I guess just to speak to the fiscal note issue, that's no fiscal note is on our desks for this bill, but we've been told by finance that it's because the changes are so small that they sort of offset each other and don't result in any change worth noting.
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, my name is Carrie Rexigel. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy. And with respect to Senate File 2067 on the fees, I was requested to do a fiscal note for the House, and so I did prepare one for finance. However, these fees were developed with the assistance of the Department of Finance, our board, admin services, et cetera, and it's estimated that these changes in fees and new fees will result in about $33,000 annually for the board. And both programs administered by the board are in some financial difficulty with fees, that we need to collect fees to offset our expenses. So, anyway, I guess unless there are questions, I can certainly answer any questions about how they were developed.
This isn't making much change, and so we're not appropriating any more money for you.
Madam Chair, that's correct. We are requesting fees. Chapter 214 requires that we establish fees to cover our expenditures in a five-year period. And so what we're requesting in this bill is modest changes to the fees that can be borne by such a small group of licensees as the license grows in Minnesota. So we couldn't try to collect all the fees at one time, or licensees would be required to pay maybe $3,000 each, and so this was something that we need to do, and it was recommended that we pursue these changes.
So this small change will just offset what your existing appropriation is?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would recommend Senate File 2607 pass and be recommended to the floor.
Or go to the full Finance Committee.
Full Finance. Okay.
That's what we send our bills to. We are a division of the full Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Okay, next we have Senate File 2066, Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Same question on this. Do you just want to deal with only the fiscal note and not the bill itself?
Yes.
Okay. I will again turn that over to Ms. Rebsigal.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This bill will affect applicants and licensees of the board, individuals who seek mental health services from our licensees, and it will have an impact on the Department of Human Services with regard to payment for services to clients who receive medical assistance in Minnesota Care. However, because this is a new level of licensure, we don't have anybody currently in the clinical license, and it's going to take, I would say, 2 to 3 years for some of the folks to qualify for the new clinical requirements. And so it's very difficult to project what dollar amount, you know, would be collected for this. However, the fees associated with the LPCC will generate revenue for the board in the form of application fees, initial licensure fees, and renewal fees. Again, I suspect that it will be in line with the other fee bill in the kind of revenue. It's not going to generate, you know, a huge amount in a short period of time. This is a growth over time.
Well, we are told that the Department of Human Services believes that the cost for their agency will be in the range of $50,000 a year. And those would be general fund costs, so we don't actually have any general fund money at this point in our committee, so I'm looking for some direction from the Department of Human Services about how we should cover this cost, these bills to move forward.
It's not a fiscal note because finance didn't refer to DHS. DHS, I contacted them.
Those costs are not reflected on this fiscal note, as I understand it, because this is just the fiscal note from the board itself. Senator Lynch?
Well, Madam Chair, I think you're seeking to clarify what my question is, because I'm seeing a disconnect here. You're saying one thing, I'm looking at another thing, and I'm hearing another thing. So,
yeah, this fiscal note is only a fiscal note from the board itself. It is not a fiscal note that reflects the costs of DHS. And we have informally information from DHS that there will be a small medical assistance cost associated with the bill, allowing these providers to receive medical assistance reimbursement. The cost will be in the range of $50,000 a year, and DHS will have someone at the hearing to address the issue. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair, and maybe Senator Erickson-Ropes, so I guess the question, and I think the chair's kind of going in that direction, where's the $50,000 coming from? Or does the department have some idea on how we can ease into that to in order that this can happen?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, thank you for the question. I'll let the department explain that.
Madam Chair, I'm Don Allen, Chemical and Mental Health Services at DHS. The costs that we anticipate on this, and we hadn't gotten a fiscal note request, so we haven't looked into it too deeply, are systems costs to program MMIS for a new provider type. Those are small costs in the $10,000 to $15,000 range, and that would have to be done before any claims could be processed from these providers. So that would be more on the upfront end. I had information that led us to believe that there would be some 400 of these providers slowly being brought on board over the next 4 years. If testimony I just heard, maybe that it would be something less than that. The amount of cost to the system obviously is going to be in proportion to what we really predict in terms of the number of new providers that will be billing for services.
You do not have any idea where this money is going to come from. You just have an idea of what its impact might be.
Madam Chair, yes.
Senator Erickson-Ropes, I think we're going to lay the bill over, and maybe there can be some discussions among the three of you about this. And
Madam Chair, I think we're at the point where the Board of Behavioral Health itself does not know how many current practicing counselors are going to roll over into this new category, and I think that's what I heard Ms. Retziger say earlier, is that it's hard to project how many are going to move into this new licensing category. It's just been created, and so they're not charged fees, which will help support the board in its functioning, and it's hard to project how many are going to do that. So I guess my question back to maybe all the players is, when there's a new category like this established, where does the revenue come from to just to boost it, to get it off the ground until it's self-sustaining with a new level of licensed counselor?
Well, Senator Erickson-Ropes, a lot of times when these new categories of licensure are created, they're created without giving them the authority to be part of the medical assistance program. And then after the new licensed area gets going a little bit, then they come back and ask to be given medical assistance reimbursement when we have a better idea how much it will cost. But at this point in time, I don't think it would be fair to say that it won't cost anything.
Right. Get him there. Madam Chair, may I?
Yes.
Thank you. I would like to clarify that the procedure you just described as a new category of license being up and running for a while and then coming back and requesting to be part of the MA system, that's actually what we have worked on for the last 2 years. And this bill, the Department of Human Services participated and actually coordinated the task force report that resulted in these requirements. And so we have been trying to do that. And, you know, it's really our hope that we can move forward as everyone who participated is in support of the license, and there is a need for the providers.
Well, I just have one other thing to add to the conversation here, and that is, if that is what you were hoping for, you should have gotten your bill here sooner, because the omnibus bill is gone and there's no money left. I mean, it isn't like I held back a little bit for late bills. Yeah, and if I had, boy.
But Madam Chair, if there is a list, if there is such a list.
Right. So I don't know what to say to you exactly, Senator Erickson-Ropes. Do you know what the status of this bill is in the House?
Yes, Madam Chair. It's passed the House, and it's in their omnibus bill.
Right? It's right here. That's where it is.
Senate File 20, or
it's a Senate file in the House.
Senate File 26 in the House, and it's rolled into their omnibus bill.
Okay. Well, if it ends up in their omnibus bill, then it could be an item for consideration in the conference committee. But our staff is telling us it's their licensing omnibus bill, and it just got pulled because they realized it has a fiscal note also, and they didn't have money in their omnibus licensing bill. So
Madam
sure.
Chair, would you recommend holding it over till next year and seeing if there's supplemental money?
Yes, that's what I'd recommend at this time. Or if it can, you know, if it's in the House bill, if it's in the House omnibus bill, then it could be a conference committee item. The money part.
I would so move Senate Bill 2066 be laid over for possible funding consideration next year if there are supplemental funds.
Okay. We don't need to vote on that. If the bill isn't acted on, it just kind of does
sit here.
There. So thank you, Senator.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Committee.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, we do have a delete all amendment.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, we do have a delete all amendment that maybe Senate Counsel could just take a couple of minutes and explain. Because there was a fiscal note, we changed it so that it would be fiscal neutral.
Well, it is special revenue on the fiscal note.
Well,
the amendment is consistent with the fiscal note we have. Okay.
Madam Chair, yes, the all delete right. all is. And so maybe Senate Counsel could just take a minute and explain
right.
it since they put it together today.
Madam Chair and members, in the delete everything amendment, it would require in subdivision or in section one, the organization with an equivalent exam to pay a $1,000 fee to the commissioner for the approval of the use of this exam. It would require new operators to take an exam and to pay an exam fee of $75. It would require the commissioner to issue a certificate to these examinees who pass the exam and pay an initial certification fee of $100. It would then require this certification to be renewed every 2 years if continuing education requirements are met, and that would be a $20 fee. And then it would require operators who didn't have to take the exam to still meet the continuing education requirements and pay a $20 fee. And then it would require limited X-ray operators to pass an exam and to meet the continuing education requirements and to pay the $20 fee.
And Madam Chair, as we were looking over it, if we could... In a couple of places, actually there's four spots where we talk about either examinee or X-ray machine operators. It's lines 21, 227, 33, and 325. We'd like to just kind of make a change that so that it would read the limited X-ray machine operator. So that's very clear. So in those, I can go through each of those spots if you'd like me to.
Just give us a line number.
You can just give us line numbers.
Okay. The line numbers are 21, page 227, page 3, line 3, page 3, line 25, so that in those spots, for example, on 21, it would say, a certificate to the limited X-ray machine operator examinee, just to make sure we're very clear on who those examinees are. And then, for example, on 227, it would be right after the word exemptions, it would say limited X-ray machine operators.
Is that clear?
And then the same on 33 and 325.
Okay, so Senator Fischbach incorporates those changes into her amendment. Any further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Well, Senator Fischbach, the fiscal note indicates that your bill will raise $186,000 in special revenue, and it will spend $186,000 in special revenue, and it will add two positions to the Department of Health. So that's very good. And I just want to caution you that we will track, if this bill passes the floor of the Senate, we will track it in the omnibus bill.
Okay.
Not the language, just the money. And don't take any amendments on the floor. This is not an opportunity for members to turn your bill into a mini omnibus health and human services spending bill.
Well, and Madam Chair, after the balancing act that we did to make sure that it was 186 and 186, we won't. I don't think I'll probably be entertaining any amendments.
Right. I just wanted to reinforce that with you, because normally these bills would be in the omnibus bill, but because your bill is late, you know, we can still accommodate it, but we need to make sure that it doesn't get any heavier.
All right. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Madam Chair, I'll make the motion.
So Senator Fischbach moves then that Senate File 445 as amended be recommended to pass. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you very much.
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, I have an A2 amendment.
Okay. This amendment is being distributed. This bill did have a general fund fiscal note, and my understanding is that Senator Pappas' amendment will take those sections out of the bill.
Right, Madam Chair, we're taking out Section 7, which would require medical assistance to cover doula services. Doula services are emotional physical support during pregnancy, labor, birth, and postpartum. So what we're left with in the bill is a requirement that upon the request of a birthing mother, she can have both a family member and a doula with her in the labor and delivery room, and she has the right to the presence of a doula as her choice, except in the case of an emergency, and to be notified that she has that right. And we are keeping in the bill a certification program for doulas, and that would be an individual who has received a certification to perform doula services from the International Childhood Education Association, Doulas of North America, the Association of Labor Assistants and Childbirth Educators, etc. And we're going to require that the Department of Health keep a registry of doulas. But there's a fee system for that, and so the fee system will pay for the cost of the registry. And so that's the shape that the amendment is.
And so that's the language on the amendment lines 1.9 and 1.10.
Right, sorry. And then upon the council noticed that there was an issue with the criminal background check, and Ms. Kavanaugh made a suggestion that we take action in accordance with Chapter 364 if someone kind of fails the criminal background check. So it's a technical correction with that section.
Okay. Any discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye. Opposed?
Aye.
The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very quiet ayes.
Aye.
So now the fiscal note that we have is just reflects the special, the government special revenue fund, the fees that are collected. The fiscal note does not show the expenditure because it was in the amendment, but the expenditure matches the revenue being raised. So the bill does balance and it adds three-tenths of a position to the Department of Health to administer the registration program.
I also want to put the application and renewal fee.
Senate Council, before we move too fast through here, has a suggestion for an amendment to the
bill.
Amendment, I guess.
No, it'd be to the bill.
I guess an amendment to the bill.
Madam Chair, this is just to clarify on line, page 4, line 18, after application put and renewal fee. So then it would be $136 every 3 years to meet the fiscal note.
And that last motion was made by Senator Lynch on the amendment A2. Senator Lynch, would you like to make this motion for Senator Pappas also?
So moved.
Okay, so Senator Lynch moves that we would add on page 4 application and renewal fee. So the word and renewal fee would be and renewal would be inserted after the word application on line 4.18. Any discussion of that amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Pappas, if this bill does pass the Senate floor, we would track the revenue in the omnibus bill.
Okay.
So you can be clear about that with you.
Okay.
Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Lynch, you want to make the motion for Senator Pappas?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate file 1197 be passed and referred to the Committee on Finance.
As amended.
As amended.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Senator Murphy is on his way. We are limiting the testimony because this bill has had a lot of testimony in various committees that have heard it all along the way. And the purpose of this hearing is primarily to focus on the fiscal note. And so we could help.
Madam Chair?
We're just handing out the second engrossment.
Oh, that's what I was looking for.
A lot of work was done on this in the Judiciary Committee, and they wanted us to make sure we had their work in front of us. We do now have it here. And I don't see the fiscal note. Right?
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, I think. Oh, okay. Is that the second engrossment?
No.
Okay.
Oh, this is the second engrossment.
No, they just handed it out. This first.
As we look at the fiscal note, which is the main thing we're focusing on in this committee today, what is normally the process for a new type of program or a new licensure is we look to see if it balances over a four-year period, because a lot of times the fees that are going to be collected are not all coming in right away at the beginning of the program. They come in over a period of time, and so we look over 4 years to see if it's balanced, and you'll see on this fiscal note that it is more than balanced.
for an extra meeting. It's supposed to be balanced.
Close to being balanced. Off by about $12,000. I guess we call that good enough for government work.
Madam Chair, is that $12,000 to the good or to the bad?
To the bad.
To the bad.
To the bad? Oh, if it was to the good, I would say that I could probably figure out where to spend it.
Well, we know that. Everybody still has a list in their back pocket of stuff that couldn't quite fit in the omnibus bill. And, you know, I guess if we find out, if this bill should pass, and we find out that we're off by more than that, you know, adjustments could be made in the future in the fees, I'm assuming, to make sure that we come out.
Now, are we on the bill itself now, Madam Chair? Okay.
We're going to take some testimony, but I'm trying to get people to focus on the fiscal note.
Okay.
Because that's what this committee is for, and I would like to remind members that we are a division of the full finance committee. Mm-hmm. So even if we don't recommend that this bill be passed, that's a recommendation to the full finance committee, and the full finance committee can still hear the bill, and if they decide to change that recommendation, they can.
But, Madam Chair, I'm sure that our recommendation weighs very heavy with the Finance Committee, doesn't it?
Well, obviously, everybody wants to have a good recommendation in every committee that they hear their bill in. But I just want to remind you that we are a division of the full Finance Committee, and the full Finance Committee can change things we recommend to them.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes they do. Full Finance Committee actually changed our omnibus bill so that we could balance the tails in it. And so, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, just so I understand the type of conversation that is appropriate for this committee, some of us may feel that in looking at the fiscal note that there are ramifications that will impact our budget, our state budget, that maybe aren't being considered in the fiscal note. For example, the cost of treatment, if the ability for non-medical persons to have access to these drugs, and if this isn't tightly enough controlled, which leads us into more of a policy discussion, but it does have a fiscal impact affect the fiscal impact as well. So I would like to have the opportunity to be able to discuss the concerns of law enforcement and those who I've heard from who deal with drug therapy treatments. But I don't want to be out of line in terms of the kind of conversation you're contemplating. And I'm not sure if we're going to hear testimony from Senator Murphy or any of his witnesses that's just going to talk about the fiscal note, or if we're going to have an opportunity as well to address anything they might raise.
Well, why don't we take the testimony on the bill, and then, Senator Olson, if you have more questions or if something wasn't brought up, then we can focus back on that at that time. How's that sound? Okay. So let's hear from the proponents, and if there are any opponents, I don't know, but we'll give them about the same amount of time.
Yeah, well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this bill is designed to do one thing and one thing only, and I believe it does that, and that is to help those people who have issues with pain, issues with sometimes life-ending, debilitating diseases. It offers them another course of drug therapy to help them through whatever particular malady they have, whether it's cancer, glaucoma, AIDS, and we've even changed the definition of chronic pain so that we set that threshold much higher, so that people that just have like rheumatoid arthritis or back pain, they would have to prove that it is unmanageable through other pain medications before that they would qualify. So we set that standard very high. We heard from in Senator Moy's committee many of the concerns that that Senator Olson has brought up several times now. She's been very consistent with her message. And we feel that Senator Mwah's committee reworked the bill and put it in such shape that it's a very stringent level that has to be met before the doctor could suggest that you use medicinal marijuana. And we also cleaned up a lot of the provisions that deal with the issues that law enforcement had. We really, you know, and I think most people around here kind of know me as a law and order guy, and part of the thing when I took this bill on, and Mr. Lehman can attest to this, was that we had provisions in there that said that if law enforcement went outside of the bounds of this, that they would be in violation of the law. We jettisoned all those provisions. You know, our law enforcement people do a great job out there, and we don't want to make it any more difficult. Now, in response to Senator Olson, there's only been one case where there's been a prosecution of someone violating the law in these other eight states, just one. It was dealt with swiftly, and the justice system worked. Folks, the bill is patterned after a lot of other states have done, and we've even went a step further in some areas. But I will say that you know, there's just a growing number of prominent medical and professional organizations that are supporting this endeavor. There's also a large body of medical professionals that have remained neutral because their membership is of mixed minds. But some of the ones that are on record are, and, you know, granted, some of these are just Minnesota. Some of them are national groups, but it's the Minnesota Senior Federation, Minnesota AIDS Project, Minnesota Public Health Association, Minnesota Nurses Association, as well as the American Nurses Association, the American Public Health Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Academy of HIV Medicine, the American Medical Student Association, and the Institute of Medicine. I think that these folks have done the homework. They've done the research. They're the professionals. And, you know, in some cases, some of the pain medication that's offered to some of these people, especially the ones that are dealing with end-of-life issues, are just not good enough. And Senator Olson, you've heard the story maybe more than once about my experience with this, our family. And I, you know, those last couple weeks that my dad was alive and battling with cancer, he was so heavily medicated that he was only coherent for a couple hours out of every day. And, you know, my dad, that's not kind of the way he really wanted to go. And I don't think that's the way anybody really wants to go, because you want to be awake and cognizant and spending those last few hours or minutes with your family. And you know, that's kind of what you want to do. You know, I think that for some people, I don't think my dad was a candidate for this because I, you know, he had pretty strong feelings about drugs and alcohol. But for those people who choose to use this as a drug therapy, it works really well. And we heard all kinds of testimony in the health committee to that end. And that's about it. And, Madam Chair, that's about all that you're going to hear me talk about the guts of the bill. I kind of came prepared to talk about the fiscal note and some of the conversations that I've had with other folks around here. And as you can see in the first couple of years, members, and we're not trying to hide the fact that in the first couple of years, this does cost the state money. We have in the Senate's budget $629 million left on the bottom line that we're going to put in the reserve account. In 08 and 09, we're down about $315,300.
Senator Murphy, let me just interrupt you. We're talking about,
yes,
special revenue here.
Yes.
And that's different than general fund revenue. Mm-hmm. We do have a special revenue account in the Department of Health. And so what happens with these kind of bills is they start out using money in the special revenue account, and then eventually when they are up and running fully, then they're paying into the special revenue account as much or more than they took out of it. And mm-hmm. so that the special revenue account is the way that new licensees, new programs that are funded by special revenue get started. We never expect, you know, for instance, if you're going to license a new health profession, when you start out, you know, you're going to not have everybody the first month come in to get their license. Mm-hmm. And yet you're going to need the staff. So that's how we work it out.
Okay.
With special revenue. So you don't need to worry about whether you're spending the reserve or somebody else's budget or anything like that. But we do have a few amendments that we'll need to make to the bill to make sure all that works out.
Okay, that's fine, Madam Chair. And in that regard, this program will pay for itself. I mean, if you look at the long-term fiscal considerations, it says that the expenditures are expected to be $1.061 million a year, and the revenue would be $1.4 million a year. So it does make a little bit of money, and it would be able to pay itself off.
It's short about $12,000, but that's okay because the special revenue mm-hmm. account allows a little bit of leeway there. Mm-hmm. And if we find over the long run that we have a lot more or less people using this than we anticipated, then we can come back in and adjust the fees, mm-hmm. which is what we would normally do. So shall we turn to Senate Counsel and ask for the amendments that would be needed for the fiscal part of the bill?
Madam Chair, on page 13, delete section 10. Page 14, on line 1, the first blank, insert $401,000. The second blank, insert $680,000. Then on line 2, delete medical marijuana account in the...
So we're just dealing then with the special revenue account, and we don't have any kind of special marijuana account. Okay, so what we're doing here is we're deleting medical marijuana account in the and inserting state government. So it would read State Government Special Revenue Fund, because that's what we actually, that's the official name for our special revenue account. So Senator Lori makes that motion on behalf of Senator Murphy. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Okay. We're not awake today. That's okay. We're getting there anyway.
One to nothing.
So, Senator Murphy, do you have any more people who want to testify on your bill? No? Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on the bill? Yes. If you want to come up to the table now would be the appropriate time. Yes. Welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. James Backstrom, Dakota County Attorney, President-elect of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. I appear today on behalf of Minnesota's county attorneys. Also, with the memo that I'm handing out, or the email outline of our concerns that I'm handing out, I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, the Minnesota State Association of Narcotics Investigators, the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, and the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. All of these organizations are in strong opposition to the passage of this law, which would legalize marijuana for medical purposes. The reasons for this opposition are numerous. First of all, we do not believe that marijuana is an accepted medicine, as that term is used in the modern concept of medicine in this country. It has not been approved by the Federal Drug Administration, the agency which is assigned the authority in this nation to ensure that medications are safe and effective for the users, and that that they can be delivered in controlled quantities that can be regulated and properly monitored. None of those things apply to marijuana. Marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance under the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which means that it has a high potential for abuse and the lack of any accepted medical use. Attached to this handout, which I hope you would at least take a minute or two to glance at, is copy of an article written by Dr. Andrea Grubb Barthwell, who's an MD who comes with significant qualifications. She is was labeled one of the best doctors in America in addiction medicine in 2003. She's the founding member of the Chicago Area AIDS Task Force. She's the past president of the American Society for Addiction Medicine. Dr. Barthwell indicates that marijuana is simply a home remedy. It is not a medicine, as that concept is understood in the medical community. She believes, and we share her belief, that to be administered properly, this medication requires the approval by the FDA under its specific standards that are designed to protect American citizens in terms of their delivery of medication. She believes, and we share her belief, that the concept of medical marijuana has been foisted, as I'm quoting directly from her, on a largely unwilling and disapproving medical profession by legislative and ballot initiatives such as this. Physicians are not its proponents. Rather, the primary supporters are those whose ultimate agenda is to legalize marijuana for non-medical purposes. Also attached to this document is another scholarly piece written by Mark Stanford, who's a PhD, who studies in the field and teaches in the field of psychopharmacology. He also addresses his concerns about marijuana and its use in a medical context. It's simply not accepted in the medical community. I think it's also important, Madam Chair and Senators, to recognize that marijuana has not been approved for use by the American Medical Association in a medical context. And even more importantly, I think it's important to take a look at the other major medical organizations in this country who represent the groups of individuals who proponents say need it the most. The National Multiple Sclerosis Society, the American Glaucoma Society, the American Academy of Ophthalmology, the American Cancer Society. None of these organizations believe that medical or marijuana should be used in a medical context in the form that it is being proposed for here. In terms of the other issues, this, as I said, is a Schedule I controlled substance under federal law. It is a federal crime to possess, sell, or manufacture marijuana. That would place and will place Minnesota in direct conflict with federal law if this legislation passes. We do not think it is sound public policy to adopt laws that contradict federal law and encourage Minnesota residents to, in essence, commit a federal crime. We believe that legalizing marijuana will increase its use, the illegal use of this dangerous controlled substance. It will lead to the belief that marijuana is harmless when it is in fact far from being harmless. It is a dangerous and addictive drug that causes significant problems throughout our society, especially among our youth, who we believe will be encouraged to increase their use of this substance. They'll have greater access to marijuana if this legislation were to pass. And that's not just statements made by myself or the Minnesota law enforcement community. Take a look at what the United States Supreme Court themselves have said when they reviewed this particular matter in 2005 and upheld federal law in connection with controlling this issue. They believe that the exemption and cultivation by patients and caregivers can only increase the supply of marijuana in the state market. Clearly, that's what will occur if this legislation passes. Also, I would encourage you to look at another attachment to the memo that I handed out, and that is the experience in the state of Oregon. In the state of Oregon, this bill, by the way, Madam Chair and Senators, has been testified by proponents as being designed to protect the seriously ill and dying. There's been testimony that I have personally heard to the effect that this will only affect 150 to 200 individuals in the state of Minnesota. Look at what has occurred in the state of Oregon with a virtually identical definition of debilitating medical condition under their law, which authorizes the use of medical marijuana. As of April 1 of this year, Oregon has issued marijuana medical cards to 14,050 persons, 13,323 of whom were authorized to use it for, quote, severe pain, end quote. We believe that, unfortunately, will be the experience here in Minnesota if this bill becomes law, and that is not the right thing for our state to do. We believe this bill will put more marijuana on the streets for illegal use, endangering the safety of our citizens and our law enforcement officers. We believe, as I said, marijuana will lead to the perception that this drug is harmless when that is not the case, and will result in increased use by our youth in our country. This is not a tightly crafted bill, as has been testified to. It is not. It is a bill that would, we believe, endanger both law enforcement officers and our residents in our great state. And it will not come, and it will not result in persons using it under the care and scrutiny of a medical doctor. There is no provision in this bill that a doctor have any follow-up contact with an individual once he or she authorizes the use of medical marijuana. In fact, there doesn't even have to be a personal appointment to evaluate the medical. It can be done over the phone. We think what will happen, Madam Chair, unfortunately, is exactly the experience that has occurred in the state of Oregon, where a handful of doctors have issued medical marijuana cards to thousands of persons, most of which do not need this medication at all for the purposes that they are claiming they need it for. That is a concern that we have. We believe this bill, Madam Chair, and Senators, will adversely impact law enforcement investigations if this bill becomes law. There are provisions in this bill that would create a safe harbor from arrest or prosecution for anyone found in the presence or vicinity of the use of medical marijuana, not just the qualifying patient. Anyone found in the vicinity of the use of medical marijuana will be not subject to prosecution for possession or use of marijuana or for any other crime. That is simply unheard of, and would clearly hamper legitimate law enforcement investigations and jeopardize public safety. These are just
a
few.
Mr. Backstrom, yes. I don't want to cut you off, but I do need to find out if there are other people who want to testify against the bill so we can manage our time properly.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair.
I don't see anyone coming forward.
I believe I'm the only person from law enforcement here today, although I want to make it very clear that this is a I represent the strong opposition of the entire law enforcement community in the state of Minnesota when I testify before you here today. The bottom line, Madam Chair, is that we think that this bill will harm far more people than it will help. We believe there are legitimate prescriptive medications available to treat the severe illnesses and diseases that this bill contemplates using marijuana for. And while we have great compassion for those individuals who are suffering from those diseases, we feel that we should follow our federal requirements, and it is not sound public policy for this legislature to substitute its judgment for the federal regulatory agencies, which are charged with ensuring that medications are delivered safely to our citizens. Thank you for allowing me to testify here today. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Are there any questions for Mr. Backstrom? Senator Coring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Backstrom, the County Attorneys Association, is it all 87 counties? I got a couple of questions. Is it all 87 counties? And then if it is, do you get together and then a majority votes on, let's say, this issue and says we don't like it, and then you come forward and express your opposition?
Madam Chair, Senator, the County Attorneys Association does represent all of Minnesota's county attorneys. We have a board of directors of 22 members who meet monthly to discuss issues of this nature and to either approve or support legislation or oppose it. This bill was opposed unanimously by the members of the Board of Directors of the County Attorneys Association. There was not unanimous agreement for the full concept paper that was that we originally produced in this matter, but it was unanimous in terms of the non-support of this particular drug, and was also reviewed, this drug for medical purposes. It was also approved, Madam Chair and Senator, for or the opposition was supported by the Urban County Attorneys Association, which is a separate entity, which has also voted unanimously to oppose the use of marijuana for medical purposes in our state.
And then, Madam Chair,
Senator Coring.
Mr. Backstrom, so is I guess it, then it's normal practice then for the County Attorneys Association to come up here and weigh in on whether they like something or dislike something, you know. But ultimately, we're the policy makers, and you'll follow through with anything that we pass up here, I would assume. Is that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, Senators, our job is to enforce the law, and we will enforce the law that this body adopts. We certainly have strong oppositions to this change in the law. That's why I'm here to testify.
And then just, Madam Chair, I just want to say that I appreciate the work that the county attorney does, and appreciated his testimony in the other committee that I heard this in. I respectfully disagree with him, but it's that's one thing great about America. We can agree to disagree. So I thank you respectfully for your work, but I respectfully disagree with you. So.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a lengthy list of concerns with this proposal, but I will am making a very cognizant effort to try to focus on the fiscal aspects of it. And with that, Mr. Backstrom, on the handout that you provided with to us on page 4, number 10, it's indicated or inferred in there that there might be situations where law enforcement is required to either pay for or return marijuana to individuals, and I would like you to advise us if that provision is in this bill, and maybe you can clarify that a little bit more fully.
Well, Madam Chairman, if I could go first here, that is one of the concerns that we're still working on, and we've agreed to, if we can't reach some sort of middle ground, just to get rid of that provision. So that's really kind of a non-issue. We will. What we've tried to do is, and maybe Mr. Backstrom can correct me if I'm wrong, but law enforcement can't reimburse somebody for these, what are they, Schedule I drugs, even if it is legal in the state to have them. Law enforcement can't, you know, if they confiscate it, they can't give it back first, and it's against the law to provide a monetary, some sort of money to kind of pay for it. So we've agreed to either, you know, to somehow get that so it's fleshed out. I mean.
So, Madam Chair, Senator
Lynch.
Murphy, is that provision still in the bill? That's my question. If it's still in there, then it's not really a moot point. It's very much an issue at hand.
Madam Chairman and Senator, there is a version of that in the bill. It's changed a couple times, but there's still a reimbursement provision. You can take it out right now if you want.
Maybe Senate Counsel could direct us to where that is, and Madam Chair, if I may, I'll go on to my next question.
Sure, and there are some more amendments that Senate Counsel is recommending for the appropriations part of the bill, so before we vote on the bill, we'll take that amendment. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my further comment is that it is more than distressing to me that this body is looking at putting something into law that we have, I believe, through the FDA, very strong, long-time process for approving medicinal drugs in this country. And I'm not sure, I'm concerned that the Minnesota State Senate is not really the authority or has the expertise to override any such recommendations from the FDA. Concerns me that the MMA is seemingly not on board or silent on this issue. And I'm also would voice concern that while I think that Senator Murphy has made some accommodation to make sure that this is cost neutral, if you will, in that it utilizes a special revenue fund. I'm not sure that this would be a use of a special revenue fund that I would hope that the Senate would be a part of.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, sometimes we don't have Senator Lynch. Sometimes we don't have control over certain issues here at the state because the federal government has decided to violate the Constitution. Now, no place in the United States Constitution does it say that the federal government has the exclusive right to even have a federal drug administration. I mean, it's just not in the Constitution. The other thing is the FDA, they won't even look at this because of the laws that are on the books. You heard Mr. Backstrom. And by the way, Mr. Backstrom and I have been friends for, I don't know, probably 15, 16 years. So don't think that we're going to leave here and hammer on each other out in the hallway, because that's just not going to happen. But, you know, the FDA just, they've abdicated their responsibility, I believe, in this area. There's so many patients out there that could have a positive benefit by using medicinal marijuana that it's, in my opinion, it's a shame that they won't allow this in some of those purposes. Now, Mr. Backstrom does a good job of saying that, you know, in Oregon this has happened and that's happened. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't cloud over the fact that there's been one person convicted in all of the other 11 states, I believe, that have this law on the books. There's only been one person that's been prosecuted because they've went outside of the law. So I don't believe that there's a whole bunch of people out there that are going to be trying to skirt the fringes of the law to get access to medicinal marijuana. I mean, you can go three blocks from the Capitol and probably at the right time of the evening find somebody on the street corner selling drugs. Now, you know, I've also heard testimony given that marijuana is a gateway drug. Marijuana is not a gateway drug. And I can say this on some small measure of authority, because I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic. And I can tell you that marijuana is not the gateway drug. It's alcohol. And we're fooling ourselves if we think that we can attack marijuana as a gateway drug and stop everything else that comes after it, because it's not marijuana. It's alcohol. It's alcohol that leads to the vast majority, and this is only what I know from going to treatment, AA classes and things like that, where I think there are some experts involved, that it is alcohol, because alcohol is so prevalent in our society.
Exactly.
So when people make the claim that marijuana is a gateway drug, I would hope that you would kind of pause for a second, think about that, because we've legalized the biggest gateway drug on the planet.
I'd like to just make sure everybody has a chance to have all the discussion we want. But before we do that, I'd like to just see if there are any more questions for Mr. Backstrom. Senator Erickson-Rose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Murphy and Mr. Backstrom. I do have a follow-up question. Thank you. You said your board voted against the bill. And then my question about that is, have they taken subsequent votes? Because this bill has really changed forms through every single committee that it goes through. And when it started out, actually the very first committee it ran through was one I sat on. I was very opposed to this bill at the beginning. I was very deep concerned. I was very troubled about the production and distribution of this, if it was going to be an acceptable medication. And in that form, I could not support the bill. And it's gone through a lot of changes in the meantime, and I feel like some of my concerns have been very adequately addressed. So when did your board vote to oppose the bill? And with every amendment and iteration, have they convened and voted against the bill consistently?
Madam Chair, Senator, our board has voted to oppose this bill in any form. And while we have, worked with the authors of the bill and those of you in the legislature, we provided a list of 23 significant concern areas in the bill, some of which have been addressed, and we certainly are thankful of that. But we remain opposed to this bill for many reasons, one of the main of which is that it will, no matter what you do, it will still be inconsistent with federal law, and we believe federal law rightfully controls the distribution of controlled substances in our country.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Baxter, for that clarification. And I think your final point maybe goes a little bit to what Senator Lynch was talking about with federal regulations. And yet, I think I'm okay with a change in rules and regulations, because I really believe our democracy comes from the grassroots up. And I don't mean to make a joke about that. I just...
Well, that was a good one.
After I said that, I realized. I'm sorry. But, if you want to talk about this in terms of we the people, when the people say this is something we want or we want a law changed, I think that's the best way for processes to work, is come from the people up to the legislators, and the legislators pick up the idea and bring it to our various governing bodies, and we wrestle with it there and move it on up from the state level to the feds. And we all know the federal train isn't leaving many stations, and states are moving ahead of federal in regards to health care, and we're bucking the No Child Left Behind thing. And so in that regard, I think it's okay for us to be looking at this as an issue. So I just want to put that out there.
Other questions for Mr. Backstrom? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know this is going to go beyond the fiscal impact, but it seems like most of the testimony we've heard has been not about the fiscal impact in terms of what we've... So I'd really like to have the opportunity to address some of the statements that have been made by Senator Murphy and some of my concerns about this bill.
Are your questions for Mr. Backstrom?
Let me ask Mr. Backstrom this question. My understanding is that prescriptions can be written, as you said, over the internet or over the phone. But
Madam Chairman, they're not prescriptions. Prescriptions are against federal law, and that's where we and that's how we stay away from the federal law. You can't prescribe marijuana, but medical professionals, mainly doctors, and we've cleaned that up in the bill, they can recommend.
Okay. Madam Chair,
can't prescribe.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator Murphy. Recommendations then can be written by doctors outside of the state of Minnesota. For example, these few doctors in Oregon who are already in the business and have written thousands of prescriptions simply because of a representation of pain would also be able to write recommendations for people in Minnesota with just as little substantiated evidence that there was a need. Is that your understanding of the bill?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that is my understanding of the bill.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Backstrom, in terms of your ability to prevent children, first, I guess, let me just ask you this question. Is it your understanding of the position of law enforcement, county attorneys, and the related government organizations that marijuana is a dangerous drug that requires a level of control in order to prevent harm to children in this state?
Madam Chair and Senator, yes, that is my belief. It is the belief of Minnesota's county attorneys and Minnesota's law enforcement officers throughout our state. It also, I forgot to mention, Madam Chair, when I testified that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the State Department of Public Safety has also testified in opposition to this bill at other hearings. They aren't here today. I can't speak for them, but I just wanted you to be aware that they oppose this bill as well for those same reasons.
And are you aware, Madam Chair, are you aware when the fiscal impact of this bill was considered that there was any consideration given to additional costs that we might have as a society or in both in terms of trying to address an increased availability of marijuana to our children or to treat drug-related addictions that might become more prevalent if we pass this bill?
Madam Chair, Senator, there, to my knowledge, has not been any consideration given to the what I consider to be significant costs that would be incurred not only by law enforcement, but by our society as a whole in terms of treating individuals who are using marijuana and the pain. And with all due respect, and I do have great respect for Senator Murphy, as he indicated, we've known each other for a long time. We disagree on this issue, again, respectfully. But there is I do disagree with him in terms of his concern that marijuana about being a gateway drug. It is my belief, after many years of experience working in law enforcement in the field of prosecution, that marijuana is clearly a gateway drug to other illegal drug use and addiction. There was testimony given at an earlier hearing by a hospice nurse who, by the way, said that there are ample medications to deal with the individual she deals with in the hospice setting, suffering from cancer and AIDS and other serious medical conditions available. But she told a very personal story about her son who became addicted to marijuana, which then led to other chemical addictions and virtually destroyed his life and almost took his life, several suicide attempts. Unfortunately, he's still here and he's getting the help and treatment. But that treatment is very expensive and it costs a lot of money. And I believe there will be more marijuana use for illegal purposes if this bill becomes the law, just because of the increased availability. I didn't mention also the increased quantities that are going to be available. Even though this bill now does not allow marijuana to be grown in a home, it still allows for 12 plants to be grown per patient. That is 4 to 8 pounds of marijuana that can be grown per year per patient. It is far more than the amount of marijuana that under any circumstance that could be considered needed for someone for a medical condition. That in itself will result in the incentives for people to illegally use that substance through thefts, robberies, or internal crimes that are committed.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Backstrom, one of the provisions that I believe your organization and others have indicated they have particular concern with has to do with the definitions. We've heard a lot of testimony about someone needing to use this drug, and I can be very sympathetic to that situation at the end of life. In a terminal situation, the side effects of this drug or the dangerousness of it, as with other pain medications, probably isn't as big an issue as providing relief to someone in their final weeks, and I think we're all sympathetic with that. But there's language in here that also talks about this being available for intractable pain, which is pain that is not responded to ordinary medical or surgical measures for more than 6 months. My understanding is that that phrase is one of the real big problems, because that's such a subjective standard. And someone could say, for example, they have low back pain and have been taking aspirin for 6 months and it hasn't been working, and they would have an entitlement to this recommendation. So, and I think that's what's been Oregon's experience. So I guess what I'm wondering is, have you attempted to work with the author of this bill if the real purpose is just to limit this to the circumstances that we're being urged to vote for this for, to remove that provision so that it doesn't just become an open door to marijuana use by anyone who wants to use it?
Madam Chair and Senator, we have proposed language that would significantly narrow the definition of debilitating medical conditions for which this could be used if it is authorized, despite our overall opposition. So we have given that language. And one of the things I think it's important to understand is that there is no connection between the illnesses and diseases that are articulated, cancer, the AIDS, the glaucoma, epilepsy, and these significant medical conditions that can be diagnosed. There's no connection between these other terms like chronic pain and intractable pain. In other words, they don't have to be tied to one of those diseases. If you really want to focus on this for people that are suffering from those illnesses, there should be a connection between the two. In other words, you can't use it unless you have cancer or AIDS, and you also suffer from intractable pain or severe nausea associated with that illness, then that would significantly narrow the focus of what this is for. Right now, that is not the case in the language of this bill.
Well, Madam Chairman, in that regard, and you heard Mr. Backstrom speak earlier that it didn't matter how we changed the bill, that they were going to oppose it anyway. We want to make sure that there's still some reasonable access to people who are in pain. We did change this, and in Section 2, Subdivision 4, where it talks about debilitating medical condition, we did start off at severe and chronic pain and change that to intractable pain. And, you know, this is pain that has not responded to ordinary surgical measures or drug therapies for 6 months. We set the standard fairly high. We've tried, and I'll go through a list of things, Senator Olson, that we've tried to reach out to the law enforcement community, but we heard very clearly Mr. Backstrom say that it didn't matter what we did, they would oppose the bill. So we don't want to have a bill that nobody can use. Their goal is to make it so nobody can use it. We want to make sure that somebody can still have access to this and use it if they are in intractable pain or a series of medical maladies. But members, Madam Chair, can I go through this just to show that we have done something? This is three pages of changes that we've made. We had the 12 plants in there. We took that out. The person that is using the drug can only have 2.5 ounces. We changed the definition of severe and chronic pain. We did have a provision in there that allowed the patients to cultivate and manufacture their own marijuana. We took that out. We had a provision in there that says who can recommend this, and it was a licensed MD, a doctor, osteopathy, or RN. We changed that so it's a doctor of osteopathy, a licensed MD, a physician's assistant, or advanced practice RN. All those people also have are currently authorized to prescribe morphine and other Schedule II narcotics. I think Senator Ropes can probably fill us in on whatever all that means. There was also a provision. We talked about the requires law enforcement agencies to pay cardholders for the fair market value of any marijuana seized. I'm willing to let that go. That's, you know, that's not a showstopper. I don't think that's I don't think that does the bill any damage if we take that out. So, Madam Chair, whenever the time's appropriate, somebody can make the motion and take Section 3 subdivision out, Subdivision 7 out. We also granted reciprocity in the original bill to marijuana cardholders from other states. Law enforcement didn't like that. We took it out. There was also some requests from the nursing facilities that we do a few things different in terms of the long-term care industry. We put those in the bill, so we changed those. The rules kind of went by the wayside. That really doesn't pertain here. Let's see. There was also in the original bill a chapter or a subdivision that said that state and local law enforcement officials who normally cooperate with federal law enforcement officials to arrest a patient or a caregiver may have employment suspended or terminated. I took that out because I didn't like it. We also put provisions in because law enforcement, you know, because we're trying to listen to law enforcement, that provides that a person who knowingly submits false information to the commissioner, you know, to get one of the registration cards is guilty of a felony, not a misdemeanor, a felony. There was also questions about when the commissioner would send his people out to inspect a registered organization. They had to provide reasonable notice to that organization. We felt that was, we agreed with law enforcement. We said, well, you know, if you're going to call somebody up and tell them, hey, next Saturday we're going to come and inspect your facility, you can guarantee they'll have it all cleaned up and everything will be hunky-dory. So we took that out. These are surprise inspections now. People don't know they're coming. There was also in our original bill, there were no background checks for a lot of the employees or board members or the registered organizations that either grow or distribute. Now it requires all agents, employees, they're also their employees, board members of a registered organization to undergo a BCA background check, and it also provides penalties for hiring those people who would happen to fail a background check. And we also, there was an issue about the registry card. So what we did was we provided for the creation of a web-based registry to allow law enforcement to immediately identify if someone's registry card is current, value, and valid, period. And so, you know, if Mr. Backstrom, if one of the Dakota County deputies is out there and they pull somebody over and they got a card, they're supposed to surrender the card to the law enforcement agent. He calls it in. They'll know right away whether or not this person is legal or not. So we've went a long way to try to address the concerns of law enforcement. Are we going to be able to meet them all? No. No state has. No state's gonna. And that's just the way it is. But, you know, it's unfortunate that we can't get there. But if we did do everything that Mr. Backstrom and the law enforcement community was asking, we would have no and Madam Chairman, and I think we heard it said earlier, but I think it's very important to note that, you know, we're all elected by the same number of people, roughly 77,000. And all across the state, it doesn't matter if you're in greater Minnesota or you're in the metropolitan area, it's 2-1-4. And that's just what the polling indicates, 2-1-4. And I don't know. You know, sometimes we go against our constituents' wishes, but I would hope in this instance that we've proven that this is a very workable plan, and let's just do what our constituents want us to do.
Madam, can I make a point on that? You know, I think that everybody on this committee has heard this bill in another committee except for you, Senator Rosen. So if Senator Rosen, Senator Sharon, you haven't heard it either?
No.
Okay, so if either of you have questions that you haven't gotten answered because you weren't in a previous committee, then I would certainly encourage you to ask your questions. But if we're just kind of rehashing the same stuff that people have done in the other committees, then, you know, I'm not sure if that's going to get us very far. Senator Rosen.
However, and I would be glad to defer to somebody else. I do have some questions that I would like to ask, but I do think what Senator Lynch is going to say or Senator Coring's question is probably very good because it does bring this to a full scope here. So,
are there other questions for Mr. Backstrom? Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, no, I don't have a question, but I would like to make a motion at some point. An oral motion.
I will recognize you when we get to motions. Other questions for Mr. Backstrom? If not, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. Now, we have some more amendments that Senate Council is recommending to the appropriations section of the bill. I'd like to take those next. We could do that so we can get the appropriations section of the bill that we're supposed to be working on in shape. Okay.
On page 4, line 8, to clarify where this reimbursement to the caregiver is coming from, on line 8 it should read, after reimbursement, insert from a registered qualifying patient or costs associated with assisting with, and then delete a registered qualifying and insert with that patient's.
Madam Chair, are we going to move these separately? Or?
Yes. Okay. Any discussion of that amendment?
And I would move that amendment.
Senator Coring has made that motion. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I guess I'm just kind of wondering about this. This must be some new language that it may be in the judiciary or one of the committees. I'm wondering if, what is the need to reimburse a caregiver, a primary caregiver? I guess I'm not quite understanding the need for that language.
Senator Murphy? Maybe you can answer that question as the author of the bill.
Madam Chair, it gives examples right in the bill. It says mileage, travel expenses.
Madam Chair.
I'm assuming a caregiver is acting on behalf of a patient for some of these things that the patient could not do for themselves.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, what we're doing is reimbursing the caregiver for driving to go get the marijuana.
Madam Chairman, some of these patients are in hospice, and the caregiver may have to, I don't know, you know, up in your neck of the woods, you may only have one outlet source, and it might be over in St. Cloud, so they'd have to drive from Painesville over to St. Cloud to pick it up and go back to the hospice area. So those are expenses that they would allow to be reimbursed.
Madam Chair, do we generally reimburse caregivers to run to the pharmacy to go get prescription drugs if someone is unable to?
Senator, we do have a reimbursement program in our medical assistance statutes for mileage. Governor recommended increasing it this year, but we couldn't fit it into our budget, so we did not increase it. But
so, Madam Chair, this would be consistent with that. I'm just making sure that
This is not a reimbursement under medical assistance, however. This would be just allowing the transfer, a private transaction, to take place between a patient and a caregiver. That would not be illegal then for that caregiver to accept that money. This bill doesn't have anything to do with medical assistance, so.
Well, and Madam
Chair, I
guess that's why
we need the amendment to clarify that. Yes. That's what Senate Council has proposed.
And I guess, Madam Chair, that's why I was kind of wondering why Is there some issue because marijuana is illegal and that's why we have to okay them transferring money?
No.
I guess because if it's a private transaction, Madam Chair.
I think you're right because it involves the purchase of marijuana. We have to say that it would be legal.
Okay.
In this bill.
Reimbursing.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
There's some limit here to what a person could be reimbursed for so that no one could construe that person to be selling this product for a profit, which would be illegal. Okay, so any further discussion of the amendment made by Senator Coring? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Now the next one is...
Chair, on page 14, after line 4, insert the following. Other money collected by the Commissioner of Health under sections 152.22 to 152.31 shall be deposited into the state government special revenue fund, period.
Madam Chair, I would so move that amendment.
Senator Coring makes that motion. Is there any discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Any other amendments now? Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, I would go back to page 4 in our earlier discussion, and I had asked Senate Counsel to identify this language, and I would suggest that lines 4.27 through 4.3 address that issue of returning the marijuana, paying for the marijuana by law enforcement. Senator Murphy has indicated that he would view that as a about as friendly of an amendment as I'm going to be able to offer. And so I would make the amendment to delete lines 4.27 to 4.30.
Madam Chairman,
and on and then renumber that section.
Just delete A.
Don't need to.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion of that amendment?
Oh, Madam Chairman, that was the amendment that we talked about earlier, and that's perfectly fine.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Are there other amendments? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, perhaps I just need clarification on this, but back to... on page 4, lines 4.7 through 4.13, and I'm realizing that this is the section that has just been amended, but in following what some of Senator Fischbach's comments, is there, I just question whether this entire section is necessary. And it seems to me that the bottom line is really we are, in the state of Minnesota, we would be providing reimbursement or providing this service opportunity. I don't know what it is. And if there's a reason that it's necessary to have that provision in the law, I guess I am looking for someone to further explain that to me. And if it's not deemed as necessary to be lawful, to make this lawful, then my suggestion would be to delete lines 4.7 through 4.13.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
I would concur with that recommendation simply because if we're really saying that we just need a doctor to recommend that this is something when they're otherwise treating a patient through the course of a serious illness, then it seems as though that recommendation could be made without a payment as they would be paid for a separate prescription. But if we want to create the opportunity, as has happened in Oregon, for people to set themselves up and profit from making wholesale recommendations of marijuana use, then we'll have this language in the bill. If we delete the language, we're at least deleting or eliminating the incentive for that kind of abuse of our intent here, or at least the intent that those have, that it's supposed to be limited to the severe types of medical conditions they're describing.
Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy, can I just ask a question?
Is yes.
this a piece of the bill that was worked on by the Judiciary Committee? Because they asked me not to redo their work in this committee if possible.
Madam Chair, I'm on that committee, and as to the best of my knowledge, I don't think we did anything with that particular provision.
Madam Chairman, I think Senator Olson's right. We didn't, but I may want to also remind, you know, and I would oppose that amendment straight out, but, you know, if you read this language, it says to be reimbursable under the subdivision, a cost must have been actually incurred by the caregiver. Now, Madam Chair, if it's the committee's wish that we drive the caregivers out of business and not reimburse them for costs that they actually incur, then by all means, take subdivision 6 out.
Well, Senator Murphy, my concern is just in the opposite direction,
mm-hmm.
that this language limits what somebody can be paid. And
right.
if there's no language in the bill at all, then, you know, presumably somebody could pay whatever to somebody because mm-hmm. the law doesn't say they can't.
Well, Madam Chairman,
so,
and exactly, I would kind of like...
You know, I think you would want some limits on what somebody could be paid to provide a service in connection with either purchasing this or getting the permit, license, or whatever that somebody needs if they're too sick to go get it themselves. I mean...
Well, yes, Madam Chair, it's a double-edged sword. It's going to cut both ways. And I think it's... you know, I think the Senator Lynch brings up is attacking it from the position that you know, you don't really need to do this because it's not, you know, other areas of the medical practice world don't do this. So why are we paying for mileage or whatever it might be? On the other hand, if there's no stipulation in there at all, you're right. They can charge whatever they want. I think that, you know, we're trying to do a couple things here. You know, we're trying to make it so that people that are in the position of either being, you know, a patient or a caregiver, so that they have some guidelines on what is reimbursable. I would say that if somebody spent cash out of their pocket to, you know, for gas or, you know, whatever it might be, you know, the example I used earlier was, you know, maybe somebody from Painesville is a patient and, you know, they're not ambulatory, they're in hospice, and the person has to go to St. Cloud or the Twin Cities to pick up their medicinal marijuana. I just think that those costs for the caregiver should be reimbursed. I mean, mileage.
So I'd like to find out if we have an amendment before us.
Yeah. Do we have an amendment?
Yeah.
Yes. I'll offer the amendment to delete subdivision 6 on page 4. That's lines 4.7 to 4.13.
Okay. So we do have an amendment. Now we can, you know, I just didn't want to sit here discussing something
right.
for the next half hour that we didn't actually have in front of us. So. We do have the amendment before us now. Senator Corey.
All I just want to say is I'm personally opposed to the amendment.
Any further discussion of the amendment, which is to delete subdivision 6, 4.7 through 4.13? Senator Erickson Rolls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe I'll ask this to Senator Lynch. If we took this out, Senator Lynch, wouldn't that... put the caregivers in a position If we're restricting them from getting paid extra fees, we're like, thanks so much for going and getting, you know, my supplies, and I'm going to give you a $20 tip. If we don't restrict how much they can get for the compensation, then, I mean, couldn't there be a possibility where caregivers are saying, well, I'm not going to take that drive to St. Cloud unless you pay me $40 extra. And, I mean, that sort of...
Yeah, this does limit so that there's no profit involved here.
Right.
And if this language is not in the bill, then I'm assuming people could still be
caregivers
paid.
Caregivers could take advantage
yeah,
of patients.
Yeah, people could still be paid, but there would be no limit on what they could be paid. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson Rhodes, I would just say that that's an arguable point in that this language is very generic in nature, and I understand what you're saying, but on the other hand, in terms of being restrictive, this language doesn't say that, you know, not to exceed or will be this amount or usual and customary or things like that. So I will just say that. You know,
well, it does say that a primary caregiver may not be paid any extra fee or compensation for serving as a caregiver, and it says that they may be paid only actual costs for associated with assisting the registered patient.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
It also says, and I guess this is another point, the price to be paid to the registered organization for the marijuana, and another point that was made in another committee but hasn't been raised here, is that we're not putting any restriction on what can be charged by the person actually growing the marijuana. So,
well, I think that's a different issue in the bill, someplace else in the bill, if you want to address that. But at this point, I think this reimbursement is limited to mileage and actual costs incurred by the caregiver. And if the amendment goes on the bill, then the caregiver could charge more and be making a profit for doing this trip, so to speak. Senator Erickson Rhodes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would speak against the amendment because for those of you who are worried about, you know, wanting to make sure we have enough regulation and control on this issue as I am, and I think most of us are, this would keep tighter control over the possibility that a caregiver might take advantage of patients, and we're setting, you know, the reimbursement as this amount, no more, and I think it's a much more conservative view to support this than take it out.
Any other discussion of the amendment? Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, I'm going to speak in favor of this amendment because basically we're paying somebody to go get an illegal drug.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion of the amendment?
That makes sense.
Okay, seeing none, those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Division.
Division. Those in favor of the amendment, raise your hands.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Those opposed?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
The amendment is defeated on a tie vote. Okay, any other amendments?
Madam Chair, does Senate Council have any more amendments to give in to shape? Are they all done with their amendments?
Yeah, we finished those. I tried to make sure we got those done first.
Madam Chair, I would so move that Senate File 345 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Madam Chair, I do have some amendments I'd like to propose.
Yes, we will not take Senator Coring's motion until all amendments are finished. So if you have an amendment, Senator Olson, let's take your amendment now.
First, Madam Chair, on page 2, on at the end of 2.22, this is the provision that talks about that the practitioner who's recommending the use of marijuana must be, basically just says who that is. I would like to the end to have added to the end of that line after the period following nurse the language the licenses referenced must be Minnesota licenses to avoid the issue of being able to access from anywhere in the United States people who are setting themselves up wholesale just for the purposes of writing these recommendations.
Okay, we can ask Senate Counsel to get that in the best shape for us.
And Madam Chair, can I just get a clarification? So we're on page 2, line 22, after the period, after registered nurse, insert that language then, Senator Olson?
Before the period.
Before the period.
Madam Chair, I guess whatever counsel suggests would be the most appropriate way to word this, but the point I want to make is that all of these professionals who are referenced here as licensed or any of them, I think they're all licensed people, that they have to have obtained their license or registration or authorization to practice in Minnesota and not in another state.
Right. I think we understand the gist of your amendment.
Madam Chairman, that's a good amendment. We've got no problem with that.
So could we just make sure if we have it in the proper shape here, Senate?
Madam Chair, I think the only difference is doing it the way that Senator Olson had, or you could say a Minnesota licensed doctor, a Minnesota licensed doctor of osteopathy, a Minnesota registered physician assistant, and I think then in a Minnesota licensed nurse would be the other option.
Madam Chair, I think that would make it probably clear to put it, to insert the language that way.
Okay, so Senator Olson makes that motion. Any discussion? Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question for anyone, perhaps. Is this kind of prescription writing or permission writing, recommendation writing, or whatever it is, Senator Murphy, that restrictive in other areas? And I understand what you're trying to get at, Senator Olson, but my husband's a physician. I know he has patients that have moved across the state line, and he calls in prescriptions for them.
Madam Chair, in response to that, any other type of medication that is prescribed for pain in this state is going to be much more restricted than we're restricting marijuana, because it's going to have to be, first of all, prescribed, and there are lots of regulations and rules that address how pain medications are prescribed that aren't going to be, if we adopted this, none of those are going to apply. There's also, I believe...
Senator Ropes, I think that Senator Murphy said he accepts this amendment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Madam Chairman, I think that Senator Ropes brings up a good point. I mean, there's, we both live in border communities.
Oftentimes, those physicians carry licenses in both states.
In both states, exactly. But
that purpose.
Yeah. But there's not a problem with this amendment. We accept the amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion then? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Olson, did you have another amendment?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. On line 2.5, beginning with intractable pain, continuing through on line 2.7, the word severe nausea, my amendment would be to delete that language. And the reason for that amendment is we've heard a lot of conversation in committee about whether marijuana is a drug that we need to be concerned about. And this standard is so loosely written. Intractable reminds me, when I think of the word intractable, I think most often of the word, an intractable child. Basically, that means difficult pain. And that's a totally subjective standard that is not going to even require a visit with a physician in order to be able to determine if this really is pain of that severity. If we have conditions that we're using with the public to justify the introduction of this legislation, then I think we should limit those conditions to things that cannot be so very easily misused to qualify in an unjustified way for a medication that does have very severe side effects. And I guess I'd just like to say on that note, we talked about alcohol being the most common entryway drug, and I don't disagree with that because I've heard lots of testimony about these issues. And I think Senator Murphy said it best when he said alcohol is the most common entryway drug because it is the most available, the most accessible. So there's a reverse logic to making marijuana more accessible and thinking that it's going to have less of that impact. I think anyone who deals with drug counseling will tell you that young children generally start with alcohol. It causes a chemical reaction in their body that prevents their body from being able to regulate moods, and they can't do it anyway through anymore through normal physiological processes that our body has. So then they move to marijuana, which has a greater effect and causes is a stronger drug. And then once
Madam Chairman, but that's not true. That's absolutely not true. Senator Olson, that's absolutely not true. In the 10,000 years of recorded medical history, there has been zero overdoses with marijuana. Last year in the United States alone, there was more than 20,000 overdoses of alcohol.
Madam Chair, I guess maybe we don't, I don't know how much you want to go into that debate, but I'm just reiterating what I've heard from chemical dependency counselors as they provide, when they've provided seminars explaining the physiological impact of using these drugs and how most children in our society end up, the progression they end up going through and being led toward the use of even harder drugs and even more dangerous drugs. But in any event, because of the difficulty in defining this, if this really isn't what we're about, if we're really not about trying to open the door to the use of marijuana for almost any use, then I would urge the members to support this amendment. And I would also point out that line 2.13 does include a provision for the commissioner to add other medical conditions or treatments that might be similar to things like cancer and so forth, if there's something that hasn't that really merits the need for the use of marijuana because it can't be treated with another drug.
Well, Madam Chair, I would clearly oppose that amendment on several different levels. One, you know, the 6-month standard was one that was not in the bill to begin with. When we talked about chronic and severe pain, we changed that because law enforcement had said that, you know, well, what is it? And so we defined it as being intractable, which is a higher standard, intractable for 6 months. And so we put a time limit on it also. But, Madam Chair, we need to get back to what the guidance that you had given the committee earlier about, you know, this is a finance committee, and now we're starting to break down into a lot of different policy things. This is one thing that we did talk about in Senator Moy's committee. I believe that the language that Senator Moy's committee worked out was pretty good, and it passed out of that committee. So,
Madam Chair, we didn't address this issue in Judiciary in terms of a vote on this language in that committee.
You know, members, normally we just kind of discourage a lot of policy work in the Finance Committee. That's not to say that anybody can't offer an amendment, and obviously anybody who offers an amendment, the amendment will be voted on. But I just kind of want to say that we always have an opportunity to offer amendments on the floor of the Senate also. So we don't always have all the people here that we need to deal with the different issues that might come up when we're getting into the substance of a bill.
Well, Madam Chair, I give you my word this is my last amendment I will offer.
And, you know, just good. To kind of take off my hat as chair of the committee and to just kind of relay a personal experience. Most of you know my husband has just been diagnosed with osteoporosis of the spine. And I had to go to the ER to be diagnosed, actually. He went to a physician first and was not diagnosed properly. He had an x-ray taken of his back, and it revealed stress fractures in his back that were giving him the pain. And so that's an issue that he'll have to deal with for a while to come yet, and probably the whole rest of his life. But, you know, I just have to say that without even being told what it was, and in a heartbeat, without even asking for it, He was prescribed OxyContin. And we didn't even realize what it was that he had been prescribed until we picked it up at the pharmacy. And nobody at any point in this transaction conveyed any information to us about the addictive nature of this drug. All we were told was it would be something a little stronger than the Tylenol codeine that he already had if he needed it. And, you know, so I just want to say that, you know, I mean, everybody has their opinion on this bill, and that's fine, but I think we shouldn't just close our eyes to the fact that there's an awful lot of stuff that can be prescribed already that may not always be in everybody's best interests to be taking.
Madam Chair, since you brought that up, I just would like to respond to that by saying the difference between that situation and this one is that, as inappropriate as that probably was that you didn't get those instructions, there was a prescription given under the normal standards for prescriptions, which means it's going to be for a limited time. It's going to be reviewed periodically, and we have a whole set of standards that deal with prescriptions. In this situation, an 18-year-old could be given a card that is going to be available under the law and be able to use marijuana for the rest of that person's life with no control on it being revoked.
No, that's also not
well,
true.
Well, Senator Olson, I just wanted to share this little personal story just to keep everybody in perspective here about what can happen to people when they have intractable pain. Senator Murphy, you want to respond to the amendment?
Madam Chairman, I would... I don't support the amendment. And, folks, on page 6, I think it's 2.1, it says the card expires 1 year after the date of issuance. I mean, so you have to go back every year. And Madam Chairman, and I understand that a lot of people have some severe heartburn with this. But let's try to focus on reality. And reality is not that 18-year-olds are going to be going out and getting this. You know, I don't know a lot of 18-year-olds except the ones that you see down at Children's Hospital. Every day, run-of-the-mill, probably 99% of 18-year-olds don't have debilitating diseases. They're not dying. And Madam Chair, and this has been, and I'm not accusing you of this, Senator Olson, but there's been so much hyperbole about this that it's gotten to the point where it's unreasonable. We're talking about people that have end of life issues or have serious medical issues or serious chronic debilitating pain issues that they're trying to deal with. Now, a lot of people don't want to take OxyContin. If there's anybody in the room that's taken OxyContin, they know that it knocks you flat down. There's nothing that you can do on it. I mean, you can't even hold your head up to watch TV. Why do we want to subject people to that when they don't want to, especially end-of-life patients who want to be alive for the last weeks or hours or minutes of their life instead of in a drug-induced coma.
Madam Chair.
Further discussion. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I would like to ask a question, and then based on the answer, I may have an amendment that I would like to add. And there's an amendment on the table. Excuse me. I'll wait.
Yeah, I thought your discussion was on the amendment.
Excuse me.
Senator Rosen, was your question on the amendment? No.
Madam Chair?
Erickson Ropes.
Yes, my question's on the amendment, Madam Chair. Senator Murphy, intractable pain is, as you said, just a very tertiary, high-level, excruciating, protracted pain. And I'm wondering if it would help if we would use the medical definition of intractable pain. Because when you say intractable pain to anyone that has anything to do with medical stuff, it is at a whole another level of pain. It's not just, oh, yeah, I got a backache, people are not going to be able to you know, get a prescription based on just a little low back pain or headaches. So it's a whole different realm of pain that a person is experiencing. So where did you get your definition from here? And I'm wondering if this is extraordinary, and somehow if we could mm-hmm. denote that, I think, in the definition, it might help people's understanding.
Madam Chair, just so you know, I just got a text message from somebody in Decatur, Illinois, that says, I like Senate File 345, and we're watching you live in our office here via the Senate's live video. So I just want to say hello to my brother.
Any other discussion on the amendment, which is to delete, beginning with the word intractable on 2.5 through the word nausea on 2.7?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
And just in deference to what Senator Murphy has said, I would add to my amendment that we delete that language and insert the phrase terminal illness to make it clear that in the situations that Senator Murphy is describing in the last couple of weeks of someone's life, that as much as I'm still going to vote against this bill, that this at least would be something that would mm-hmm. allow for use in those terminal illness situations.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chairman, there's the deal right there, is that Senator Olson's not going to vote for the bill anyway and is going to do whatever that, you know, that she can. I mean, you know, just it's what I do. It's what I would do if I opposed the bill, to do whatever I could to water it down and make it ineffective. What we're going to do here is, if this amendment is adopted, is water it down to where it's going to be, where it's not going to be workable. It's going to work only for those people who have been diagnosed with some sort of terminal cancer or some other terminal disease, when this offers opportunity for people who have diseases such as MS or Crohn's disease or Alzheimer's, which are not terminal, but these people still have serious pain issues. And it's going to allow them the opportunity to use this drug.
Madam Chair, no, that isn't what my amendment would allow. For everything that's named here to be a reason, as well as any other terminal illness. And so what it doesn't do is it doesn't allow a wide open door to a subjective standard that, as much as Senator Erickson Ropes is familiar with the use of the term intractable pain by medical professions, it doesn't have, I don't believe, an accepted legal definition, and is an extremely subjective, and it could be someone, again, who has had difficult pain according to their own perception of that and has been taking aspirin for 6 months.
Well, Madam Chairman, pain is subjective, period. That's all there is to it. You go to the doctor's office, they say, well, what's your pain like? And you go, I don't know. So they go get a little chart for you, and they hold it up. It's got little smiley faces, and then it goes down to number 10, big old frown on the face. And they say, where are you at on a scale of 1 to 10? It's all subjective. And a lot of medicine is subjective. A lot of medicine has been trial and error. So, folks, just vote against the amendment, please.
Any other discussion on the amendment?
I just wanted to say that I'm not supporting the amendment.
We'll find out who's supporting it right now. Those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Any other amendments? Senator Sharon.
I would like to ask a question of Senator Murphy, and then I may have an amendment. Senator Murphy, I noticed that in the bill there is, on page 6, in reference to the registry identification card expiring 1 year after it's issued, which is part of the discussion about that it's not limitless utilization. Was there discussion or any consideration of having
similar to other controlled substances that are prescribed, there is typically that have a highly addictive nature to them. The practice is to have a physician review every 3 months. And some of the concerns that I have about this has to do with that kind of a review process. And even though the physician's not prescribing this, they are offering some kind of written certification.
Mm-hmm.
And wonder what your reaction would be to including some language that would change that 1 month to 3 months, or in some way require a 3 month review by the qualified practitioners that you've identified.
Madam Chair, can I just say something?
Senator,
I would just say that, you know, we did hear this in the Health Policy Committee, and mm-hmm. and we're getting into policy again, changing the policy in the bill. And really, I thought the only reason that it was brought to this, because it was heard in judiciary, it was heard in policy, and the only reason really that it was brought here to bring it into so the shape so that they would have no fiscal impact. Is that correct?
The major reason the bill is here, the only reason the bill is here, is because it has a fiscal note.
Okay.
It affects the Department of Health.
Mm-hmm.
As I said earlier, while we discourage policy amendments, mm-hmm. We can't prohibit them. So, you know, I expect this bill, just because of the nature of the bill, is going to have amendments. Mm-hmm. It'll be offered everywhere it goes. So
mm-hmm.
probably not much we can do about it. But
yeah.
if you don't want to vote for amendments that change the policy, then don't vote for them.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, in response to Senator Sharon, I think we need to think about this a little bit, because people that have Crohn's or MS or cancer, the chances that it's going to go away in 3 months most of the time is slim to nil. I mean, in some cancer patients, you can, people can be cancer-free for periods of time. But it's an interesting concept. I don't know exactly how we would do it, but I would rather just leave the bill the way it is for right now. But I'll talk to you about it, and we can think about it a little bit. Maybe ask some other opinions around the table. But right now I don't know how we would do that, and I need
Senator
to kind of think through
I
it a little bit more.
I would encourage you to think about it.
You know,
today, if there is a controlled substance that's being prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
The prescription does have to be renewed every 3 months,
mm-hmm.
and that includes ADHD medications and things that are, commonly used. And mm-hmm. it doesn't mean you have to actually see the doctor every 3 months. It just means
right.
that it just that means right that the
here? That the physician has to look
the,
through the file.
Yeah,
right.
that they have mm-hmm. to give you a new piece of paper.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chairman, like I said, I think that we need to think about it a little bit, maybe work with counsel in the meantime and try to figure out something that would work if that's the direction we need to go in.
Senator Sharon.
Senator Murphy, thank you. I think mm-hmm. as I've heard discussions here, some concerns about people having access for long periods of time
right.
or for a lifetime, that mm-hmm. might be a way to allay some of those concerns. And mm-hmm. and for Senator Coring, I'm not on the policy committee. It is part of the problem for me for a number of subjects that come through the committee when it is narrowed to the budget issues only. It makes it difficult for me to know how to vote for something, because I'm sort of caught with policy in my mind along with the budget issues. But I'm willing to, if the author is willing to work on this as this moves along, I'd be willing to lay that aside for now and mm-hmm. work on an amendment in the future.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I appreciate that. I have just a couple concerns, and if it's a consistency issue between this drug and others, then I think that we need to kind of bring it into, get them all lined up. And if it's 3 months, it's 3 months.
Senator Rosen, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question for you, Madam Chair. Where does this bill go from here?
To the full finance committee?
To full finance. Mm-hmm. And Senator Murphy, I applaud you for working. It sounds like you have worked diligently on this bill.
Well, Madam Chairman and Senator, as you know, that I mean, we get a lot of the credit, but it's, you know, people like Tom and the Nurses Association and a lot of others, and even law enforcement that has chipped in here to kind of get this to where it is at.
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, I do have several questions that deal with actually budgetary items and actually the Department of Health. Senator Murphy, on your lost cards on page 7, line 12, you have a $10 fee. Now, I apologize. This is the first time I've heard this bill. What deters somebody from giving their card to somebody else or selling their card? I mean, they lose their card and they only pay $10. Is that enough of a they can go and get another one? So can you explain that to me, why it's so weak?
Madam Chairman, and I think it's in the bill someplace, but, you know, if you misrepresent the use of the card, it's a felony offense. So if you got a card and you sell it to me and I try to go use it, I'm guilty of a felony. You got to pay your $10 to get another card, but...
Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, what's the identification on the card? Is there a picture?
Picture.
Is there... Huh? And it's okay. Mm-hmm. And then, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. on page 9, line 30, and I'm sorry, I don't have my glasses. There is an oversight... language by the Commissioners of Public Safety and Agriculture. And when you're growing, there's the old agronomist in me, when you're growing marijuana or pot, what's going to prevent them from using chemicals on that? And is the chemicals going to go through the pot and you're going to have some adverse effect?
Right.
On the, have you thought of that, Mr. Senator Murphy? There should be some oversight as far as the quality mm-hmm. of this pot and what's... but there has that been addressed at all in your committees?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, and Senator Rosen, your glasses are right there.
No, these are distance.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can borrow mine if you want. No, that's kind of why this provision was put in there, is so that you know, all these state agencies that deal with things like agriculture, and this is an ag product, you know, so that the commissioner and his folks in agriculture can have some input on what's appropriate and what's not. I mean, if you saw the way that tobacco was farmed and the chemicals that's put on tobacco, you would shudder. I don't believe that our Commissioner of Agriculture is going to let anybody use benzene and some of those things on this product.
Madam Chair.
Like the tobacco
Senator
industry
Corrine, this is
does.
Very serious issue. You can get very sick from chemicals that are applied onto onto these
right.
crops, and that's basically what you have here.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think there should be some oversight from the Department
right.
of Health, which would perhaps change the mm-hmm. fiscal note on this, because if we're talking quality, it's certainly not the Department of Ag
mm-hmm.
or the Department of Public Safety that has got to measure the quality of this, if you want to call it a drug.
Mm-hmm. You know. Well, Madam Chair, you know, there's Senator Rosen, and, you know, I'm no stranger to questioning sometimes what's in these fiscal notes. Sometimes I just absolutely don't agree with them. This fiscal note, I had a little heartburn with it in the beginning, but I think that they've got it into pretty good shape. You know, and I just I don't see us needing to spend a lot of money or resources, you know, for some of the people that are going to be growing this product. You know, currently we... You know, it's people grow vegetables in their gardens. We have potato farmers down by Hastings. I mean, corn growers out in your area, bean growers, and you know, these people that deal in agriculture, they know what appropriate levels of pesticides, herbicides to use, or whether or not to use them at all. You know, a lot of people now, and it's the fastest emerging market in agriculture, are organically grown commodities, whether it's beef cattle that have, you know, that are drug-free and haven't been fed, you know, modified, genetically modified corn and things like that. But these folks know what they're doing, and I think the Department of Ag is probably, you know, they probably have a leg up on the Department of Health in this area.
Madam Chair and Senator Murphy, however, this is a, you are growing this for medicinal uses, and mm-hmm. this is a little bit different than your organic farmer down the road. I do think there is a quality issue that needs to be addressed mm-hmm. in this bill. Like I said, you've worked very hard on this bill, but I do mm-hmm. think there is, this bill is ripe for abuse. And I don't mean that lightly, but there in a lot of areas, if somebody wants to gouge the market, grow something that's inferior, causes some kind of after effects because of the chemicals or the conditions they grow them in, mm-hmm. it's quite viable. They could do that. Mm-hmm. And so a quality section or mm-hmm. something dealing with the product, that the end product, should be addressed, I believe. Because, yeah, there's standards, and it's almost like the standards out in the ag community is, you know, your neighbor. He's got straight rows and a better, more bushels per acre or whatever. But mm-hmm. Department of Ag, this is a whole new arena for these boys. And this is something I think that the Department of Health needs to have mm-hmm. as much of a input into this as mm-hmm. the BCA or the Public Safety and the Ag. And so, well, Madam Chair, I'm not sure if I'm making amendment or I'm asking on good faith that that's going to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And as you say, there's you well, changed the bill, but perhaps by doing some of these measures, Senator Murphy, you will be able to.
Madam Chair, and that was one of the issues Senator that was Murphy. That was brought up in Senator Moss' committee was you know, maybe THC content levels and things like that with the drug. But you know, we could spend all day talking about how or trying to run down what the appropriate THC level is, but everybody's pain, you know, when I, you know, we said it was subjective. You know, you hold up the little chart, is it one, a smiley face, or is it 10, a frowny face with big crocodile tears? And, you know, when you, the intent is to be able to use the product until the individual feels relieved from their pain or their discomfort. For some people, you know, if they've got, you know, a better quality product, that might mean less inhalation. If it's somebody that has something that's maybe not as high test, it might mean a little bit more, but it's you know,
Madam
it's kind of one of
well,
those
I
things where you're
Senator
trying
Rosen's
to fix it.
Making a suggestion for you to consider
yeah.
if the bill leaves us.
Mm-hmm. And it was considered, and there was a standard that was put in there for, and I can't remember the exact percent, but it was it had to be like 7.5% THC value. We ended up taking that out because we found that it was you know, one, it's fairly costly to try to figure out, you know, what the actual content is. And the other thing is that, you know, everybody's pain threshold is a little bit different. So if you say, okay, you can, you know, do, I don't know, you know, four marijuana cigarettes a day, well, that may not fully address the pain, or it may be too much. So, you know, we decided to leave that open.
Okay, thanks.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Our Senator Murphy, my question really has not been answered about mm-hmm. the quality and the oversight of what's being grown and the people that are holding what's it called?
Mm-hmm.
The oversight in the quality issue. That really hasn't.
Well, Madam Chair, the quality issue was addressed in Senator Moy's committee, and we decided to leave that section out of the bill. As far as the cultivation, that's something we can think about, but I would prefer to leave it just the way it is.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Rosen,
if you put in the Department of Health as far as another one of the commissioners that needs to be consulted on this, that would change the fiscal note, wouldn't it?
Well, this is the Commissioner of Health that is doing the whole fiscal note in the bill at this point appropriates the money to the Commissioner of Health. It adds 10 employees to the Department of Health when the bill is fully in, you know, at its full four-year
Madam Chair?
Use. So they would have 10 employees to do whatever they think they need to do to these organizations that would be registered to be growers.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
I just wanted to clarify that in Judiciary, we did not discuss Senator Rosen's concern. We addressed, and Senator Murphy wanted taken out the language that had been placed in by another committee that had to do with the strength of the marijuana and a limitation on how strong it could be. And if I recall the discussion there, the concern he had and the proponent of this legislation had was that there was at least one of the concerns was a possibility that because it's illegal under federal law to prescribe marijuana, that when we get into anything that makes it look like a prescription, like, for example, strengths and so forth, that we make the law more susceptible to challenge under federal law. And so I think that was the discussion we had in Judiciary, and it didn't have to do with the addition of pesticides or, you know, other kinds of thing concerns about those quality concerns or issues. I don't know, Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, if that accurately represents our discussion.
No, you're right, Senator Olson. And what I was just saying was on the, you know, on the dosage or the strength, and not so much in regards to the cultivation. But I think Senator Berglund answered the question on that. So sooner or later, a blind squirrel will find a nut, Madam Chairman. So,
are there other amendments? Any further discussion? Senator Fischbach?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to request a roll call.
Okay.
And
thank
Madam
you.
Chair?
I think Senator Coring had made the motion earlier, so we don't need a motion. Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair, I just one clarifying comment that was batted around this table quite a few times about the gateway drug, but whether it was marijuana or alcohol. And actually, when you talk to drug counselors dealing with kids at the sober schools or whatever, the gateway drug is tobacco, then alcohol, and then pot, and it keeps going. And that is their one of their biggest concerns. So I'm not sure if you ever had, Senator Murphy, a drug counselor or anybody dealing with children testify in support or against this bill, but I'm just stating that fact.
And Madam Chairman, Senator Rosen, there's been professionals in that area that have been on both sides of the issue. And you know, I you're right, tobacco is probably the gateway drug. And Madam Chairman, you know, I can tell everybody in here, these are a lot harder to quit than anything else on the planet.
Any other discussion?
Well, let's wrap this.
Seeing none, then the secretary will take the roll.
Berglund.
Yes.
Lynch.
No.
Erickson Ropes.
Yes.
Fischbach.
No.
Horing.
Yes.
Laurie.
Yes.
Olson.
No.
Pretner Solon.
They just called you.
Pretner
Solon. We're taking the roll call on the bill.
Yes. Rosen.
No.
Sharon.
Yes.
This motion does prevail 6-4. With that, thank you, members, for all the hard work that we've done this year. I really appreciate all your patience with me, and I look forward to working with some of you, I hope, on the conference committee and the rest of you on the sidelines on the conference committee. With that, the meeting will be adjourned.
Are we really done?
Is that it?
Are we done?
We're really done.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Really done?
There's no time to